baby.
Yeah, right. But no, you're absolutely right.
Here, this kind of feels maybe lazy a little bit.
Welcome to Set Cheddar Park. Movie screenings.
Why not, you know?
Yeah, at that point, why not?
It's got to be Saturday somewhere. It's just so familiar.
It's hilarious. I think we did like 5 shows on this movie.
My name is Tom Cole.
Oh, you bite your tongue if this does not hold up.
Cream corn tonight.
Cream corn tonight.
That should be good corn time. It's a movie. Just wait for the big giveaway at 9.
Happy Saturday, Robert.
Happy Saturday to you.
We are all living in a material world, and we are material girls. And I have to say, on the last show, we talked about your upcoming plans for Madonna, and somebody posted on the YouTube video, this will be my first Madonna concert ever. I can't wait to see her. I hope she's not late for the show. And then a day later, she postponed the tour. I feel so bad for this guy. So if you're watching and listening, we feel your pain, especially Robert.
Well, here's the annoying thing. Like, it's not been officially postponed or canceled. You can still buy tickets for it on Ticketmaster. It's a week from today. So, but it's not happening. So,
wait, so she had maybe septic shock.
Here's the thing. We got one Instagram from her manager, and that was it. There's been nothing. Otherwise, it's been radio silence. It's been all speculation and so forth. So fans are pretty upset as they.
And her manager is Guy
Osiri.
Guy Osiri. I saw he posted that statement.
That was the last official.
That's it.
Anything. That was it.
So it might still happen.
No. So it's like if you call Rogers Arena in Vancouver, it's already taken off their website. But Ticketmaster, you can like buy a ticket right now for it. So I don't know if they're. So I do know what they do is like there's a 60-day thing. So once they postpone or cancel, they have 60. You have 60 days whether to refund your ticket or go with a new date, and they just haven't figured that out yet. But it's just annoying to fans. I mean, international fans. Yeah. I see some international fans are already arriving in Vancouver because their plane tickets were non-refundable. You know, what are they supposed to do?
Right.
Yeah.
What do you do with that? I feel bad, but you said on the last show, like, I'm like, it's happening. You go, it better be.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you never know.
Well, she's obviously going to do this tour. It's just a matter of when.
I don't know anymore. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, we hope she's okay.
Yeah.
We hope Madge is okay. I did watch League of Their Own again.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It just said its anniversary, I think. Mm-hmm. So. And continues.
And Sandlot had an anniversary, too. It's the 30 years.
Gotcha.
Do you think Madge is... Because I saw her kids were visiting her. Do you think she's in, like, recovery mode now? Or is she just, like... Is she back? Is she, like, out and about?
I think she's still in recovery mode. And, like, Rosie O'Donnell tweeted that she's recovering but strong. You know, little hints and whatever. I know Rocco's already back in London. And usually I don't pay this much attention to Madonna during the non-tour times. But now people are just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. What's happening?
Yeah.
The latest report alleges that Narcan revived Madonna.
Not so much
that it was a heroin overdose, but because of the septic shock, it was used.
Which seems kind of a stretch, but I don't know. Who knows?
I don't think Madonna's doing heroin, though.
No.
She's like, she's 64. I mean, the risk of septic shock is increased. So that's probably what they used. But the news will say just about anything to get you to click on that website.
Yeah, and you clicked on it. There you go.
There's your penny. Enjoy your penny. But last thing I'll say is, according to reports, this is the latest that I have, Madonna's been battling a low-grade fever for about a month prior to her collapse. So there could be some issues there. But we hope she recovers soon. Yes. And may the Rogers Center be the first show she does. And may Robert be in attendance.
We shall see. So
you need Madonna insurance. Like, there should be an option for Madonna insurance if she cancels.
Luckily, I mean, a hotel and a car were booked without payment, so that was no problem. One air ticket was non-refundable, but you get a credit, so it could be worse.
Yeah, right. It could be worse.
Yeah.
Well, she's in our thoughts and prayers, Madge. We know you're listening, so get well soon.
She could be right now. What else does she have to do?
No, absolutely.
Sit around and listen to the podcast.
We have... By the way, you are listening to Set Jetter Saturdays with Robert Patterson. Check him out on Instagram at @set_Jetter and his website, of course, at setjetter.com. You were just at the Hollywood show. Tell us all about this majestic
week.
I was.
So I flew in for a few days. So I was, one, most excited to meet Donna Mills, who I think is 82. She does not look 82 or whatever
no,
age
she does,
she is.
She does
so.
Not. If you don't know who Donna Mills is, she was in a bunch of films, but I guess The Love Boat is the biggest one.
What? Knots Landing.
Hawaii 5-0?
Knots Landing. She's all Knots Landing, even though I did tell her, I'm like, I just watched you. I just watched you, and look what's happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
And she's like, ugh.
Did she make that sound?
She kind of, I was just like, oh. She goes, well, that was one of my first roles, or one of my very first. But anyway, so she was very nice. And then right next to her was Joan Van Ark, also from Knots Landing. So if you see my picture of Donna, because she's like, who are you? You can tell I just got off the plane because I'm wearing my Madonna shirt. So she was covering up Madonna's face on my shirt.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. And then Joan Van Ark was trying to do the same. But anyway, it was a good show. I was really excited. Diane Ladd was there. She is fantastic. Laura Dern. So I just listened to Laura Dern on NPR talking about her and her mom co-wrote this book. And so luckily she had that book with her to sign copies. So.
Oh, cool.
Super
sweet.
Is it
an autobiographical book?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nice.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer was there from Vamp, Michelle Pfeiffer's sister. But one of my favorites. Mindy Sterling was there.
Nice.
And she'll be in Omaha.
Sandin the Clone!
Mo Collins from more from Mad TV. She played Stuart's mom. Stuart! What do you want to say about that?
Stuart.
Adrian Zmed from Grease 2. Lani Kazan from everything. I talked to her about The Big Hit. Carney Wilson. Julie Brown from... we talked a lot about Madonna. So she used to do the Medusa Dare to Be... kind of the parodies of Madonna. So
Dare to Be Truthful.
So we chatted... And one lady, she played Big Rosie on Laverne and Shirley and maybe Happy Days, I don't know. But I know her best from one line in The Witches of Eastwick that I still say to this day. So,
what's the line?
So Susan Sarandon's all, walk around the store and getting groceries. And then somebody calls her a slut. And they're like, what'd you say? She goes, you heard me. And then she walks out and then... the actress name is Carol Ida White, and so she turns around like she's not wearing a bra.
She's not. Oh, I know that line. Yeah.
So yeah, she goes, well, she was like tickled pink. She goes, nobody has ever told me that was their favorite line, and that let alone to sign it on an autograph. But she said she actually made up that line on the spot. So.
Oh,
which is great. So anyway,
that is great. I love the ad libs.
She was so excited that somebody was kind of random,
Oh yeah, yeah. Some of the best lines, those little nuggets, like mean a lot to a lot of actors.
Yeah. So, but otherwise, Brian and I hung out quite a bit and did some set jetting and went all over the place.
Did you do any Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles?
We did some Crocodile. I tried to finish out the best I could, my Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, which I just posted today, even though the anniversary.
Yes.
I was trying to do it in 2021 for the actual anniversary, and I just couldn't get to everything in time. But take advantage of the holiday, that it was holiday weekend, and a lot of stuff was closed and made it easier to travel around.
You can maneuver better.
Yeah. For Madonna, we did some hung up locations. A lot of Mrs. Davis locations. We went to the Facts of Life dorm, Yellow Jackets locations, went out to the desert even. So,
oh, cool. I did see your Yellow Jackets locations. Yeah. You did a good job.
Yeah. So I was also excited to visit the hotel and restaurant from Revenge of the Stepford Wives.
Oh, cool. Where's the hotel?
It's down in San Pedro. So, and I was a little worried because I'm like, what kind of place? But it was nice. It was a nice place. And they actually, the restaurant person, the restaurant was closed, but the owner was there and happened to let me go in and take some pictures and so forth. But,
oh, nice. You have to go
and we went to several locations for The Lonely Lady.
The Lonely Lady. Yeah, you did. You shared a few shots. I can't wait to see all these pages.
Yeah, so I'll be trying to get to work on those updates. So, but yeah, just a short trip because I was supposed to be home for a few days and then flying out to Vancouver tomorrow. But
tomorrow is tomorrow the day already?
Tomorrow was when I was supposed to fly out because I had a many locations planned for Vancouver that are not happening now, but it'll happen in the future.
Well, okay. Well, I am glad you had a successful trip and that you saw the stars minus Eddie Deason didn't harass you this time. Is he still at these things?
I've not seen him lately. There was no Grease people this one. So Aileen Quinn happened to be there. She was not signing autographs. She was visiting friends or something like that.
Oh, so. She was just like stopping in.
Yeah. So as Annie does, you know,
as Annie does.
The next Hollywood show I am so excited for.
Why? Who's in the house?
The lonely lady, Pia Zadora.
Oh, right. She's on, she is on the next episode of one of my favorite podcasts, The Hollywood Godfather, which I'm so excited to hear her. I think it comes out Tuesday, but yeah, it's going to be great. So she's going to be there?
Yes. So I was like, is this a dream come true? But
yeah, that is so cool. Because
obviously, as we were driving around, Brian and I were talking, he had not seen The Lonely Lady. So he's listening. He has a big homework list of films that he has not seen. So
he's got to do some work.
You've got to take a look at The Lonely Lady. So
The Lonely Lady. So, when is that next Hollywood show?
October 6th and 7th. So I think the weekend before is the Halloween 45th anniversary convention. And the weekend after is the Buffy special thing at the high school in Torrance. So I think I'll just be in LA for a month.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to do a special live show. And that's the Halloween 45 Years of Terror, September 29th through October 1st at the Pasadena Convention Center, which is one of the coolest spots for a trade show. It's just such a pretty building. It's a pretty town. I love that intersection there. It's cool.
Pasadena is so much nicer. So we started the day, Brian and I, first coming down like to, you know, through Hollywood and kind of central Los Angeles and like, ugh. And then the next day we did Monrovia and Pasadena and Pomona. It was just nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like they had a good trip.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the 45th anniversary convention, and there's quite a packed house going to be there.
I have not looked at it at all. So
yeah, it's got it even has so it has Nancy Loomis.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Nick Castle, PJ Souls, Will Sandin, who played the young Michael Myers.
Yep.
I mean, I could go on and on, but it looks like they really, really got the big guns out for this one.
Yeah, and there's a couple. Rowan Campbell from Halloween Ends is going to be there, so I'm excited that they're getting some newer people as well.
Oh,
but
cool.
Yeah, they make some guest announcements a couple of weeks. So, and then I've been hard at work. I got a last minute deadline, I think, for this convention, for the special magazine to do. They want to do the locations of every Halloween movie.
Yeah.
So
they want to. Yeah.
Yeah, which I have some pictures or whatever, but they also want to use previous articles and add to them. And so I was worried because I was going to be out of town, but I think we got all the Halloween in. So even though I
either everything.
Subconsciously skipped Halloween Resurrection, but I went back and did it. So,
hey, you're Robert Patterson. You do what you want.
I do. Yeah. I barely acknowledge that film exists, but
you don't, do you?
I try not. I forget about it.
Try not to.
Yeah.
And that'll bring us to what you've been watching, Robert. We do nothing with our lives but watch TV and movies.
That's what it looks like. Tubi. Yeah.
I will kick it off, and I will tell you, I watched The Flash. I finally saw The Flash. I was the one person that saw it,
and I
really enjoyed it. I thought the third act might have become a little muddled, but overall, I'm very surprised it didn't do as well as it did. I thought it was a very solid film, and the Michael Keaton scenes just give you the goosebumps. You're back in 1989 or 92, and it just brings you back to childhood. So it was pretty, pretty cool. Ezra Miller, I think, did a great job.
One to watch in the theater, or you can wait till.
I think it's one to watch in the theater, just because if you're going to watch it in IMAX, there's just so much going on. And the effects were really, really fantastic.
Okay. Good to know.
There is a part where they give, I try not to give too much away, but they incorporate other versions of superheroes from movies going way back to the 50s in this montage. And it's like pretty incredible.
Nice.
But yeah. Flash was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I watched Catching Killers on Netflix.
Is this a series, or I feel like it sounds familiar. I might have watched some of it. I don't know.
It is. It's a series on different serial killers that they caught over the years.
Okay.
And what I like about it is, unlike Unsolved Mysteries, they don't leave you hanging. There's always justice. Like, justice is always served. So
good.
They always button it up with, like, we got them. They're dead or in jail or whatever. And, like, it's great.
All right, I will add that to my. I think I'm pretty sure I've seen the first season or two, but good to know that there is a new season out there, because what else should we be watching except murder?
Exactly. We got to keep piling it on. It's good.
We
for
like
the...
to see people get caught, though. So
right, we do like to see people get caught. I rewatched Dave, Ivan Reitman's greatest film, next to Ghostbusters.
Got Sigourney in there, you know.
It does have Sigourney in there, and you've seen Dave, right?
Once.
There's a part where her and Kevin Kline are pulled over by the cops, and to get out of it, they said that we're wedding, you know, entertainers. We just did the Sacristine wedding. The sun will come out tomorrow. And they both start singing, and the cop goes to Dave, listen, I'm not going to give you a ticket. You're really good, but she needs a lot of work, you know, and she's the first lady, and it's funny. I don't know. It's just one of those funny movies. And then I rewatched Napoleon Dynamite and The Shining. It could have been more opposite with those films.
I assume the Stanley Kubrick Shining, not the TV version.
The Stanley Kubrick Shining. Yeah, I had to give it a rewatch. It was on Tubi, I believe. So I watched The Shining again, and I haven't seen Napoleon Dynamite in years.
I haven't either. I kind of missed that wave of mm-hmm. not quite my thing, but
yeah.
The Shining in the summer.
I know. It's a rare it's a rare breed. I don't think I've ever watched it in the summer. But talk about great acting, though, in The Shining. I mean, really. Often it's overlooked, and they talk about the brilliant filmmaking and the secrets, but like the acting really is fantastic in that.
I think Shelley Duvall just had a birthday yesterday or sometime earlier this week.
Really?
So, yeah.
Happy birthday, Shelley.
Hopefully how about you, sir? As well. So in the theater, we went to see Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Oh, how is it?
It was fine.
Yeah?
Certainly better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, good. Good
still,
to hear.
No way it catches up to the trilogy, original trilogy at all.
I don't think they can do that anymore.
Yeah, so a few chuckles here and there. I wouldn't say it was necessarily disastrous, but it was fine. You know, like
it reassuring that it's better than the Crystal Skull, though.
Yeah, it's just I didn't go out. You know, I left Crystal Skull like seething. You know, like mm-hmm. it was like this was.
I know.
You know, and then
I know,
but it is still another decade too late. You know, like
yeah. How was the de-aging? Did it like distract you?
You know the. It should have been a shorter scene, and they do their best. And I mean, a lot of it's trying to be in the dark and whatever. And so it just seems kind of murky and stuff too, but they still haven't quite got it. You know, there's good parts, but you know, it looks better in stills than once people start looking or there's, you know, it's the human eye, you know, it can have that dead eye.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's always the eyes that give it away, and you're like, that's not real.
Something's not quite right, you know.
But, right, it's not matching up.
Yeah, but it was fine, and the thing is, like, there's some ludicrous parts, but every Indiana Jones has had ludicrous, you know, like, we think of Temple mm-hmm. of Doom and falling out of the plane on the raft, and they land, and nobody breaks a bone, you know. Like,
right.
So
right.
It's always been a certain level of ridiculousness that we just kind of...
I mean, Last Crusade, where he's like... Yeah. The leap of faith or whatever. You're like, okay. Okay.
But it was fine for what it was. So.
Oh, well, that's good to know. I still have that on my list to see in the theater. Yeah. I just haven't done it yet, but I'm glad that it's better than Crystal Skull. gives me some hope.
Yeah, and the other one I want to see in the theater, of course, is the new Mission Impossible. So, so as much as I'm not really a Tom Cruise fan, I'm a fan of his love for movies and doing it the right way. So,
right. He's not afraid to do stunts and give the audience what they want. You have to give them that.
Otherwise, yeah, my other stuff I've been was kind of on in the background at the hotel, you know. So, I don't know if that counts. So,
it counts.
Yeah, so like for some reason they had a marathon of all the Star Wars prequels, and so not that I was just sitting there watching it, but you know, yeah. And they still don't. You know, every once in a while I'm like, oh well, maybe there's pieces, and I'm like, there's just so much walking and talking, and then they cut from one scene and another group is walking and talking, and
I know,
and apparently they're either standing in silence and then the cameras turn on and then like they start. It's just kind of
strange
that way.
And they're too like perfect looking, you know. There's just the thing I love about the originals and even the new ones is they like things break in them and there's things that are like damaged and rusty. The prequels are just so glossed up, like you're watching a commercial with constant like golden CGI. There's just even like the scenes where they're like fighting and somebody's hurt. It's just. It feels more like a video game. I don't know. Yeah. I do visit the prequels once in a while, and I'm always kind of like, it's always kind of a chore.
Yeah. Well, even so, you know, compared to, let's say, the first Raiders of the Lost Ark or even like Terminator 2, there were so many live stunts that you know the difference. You know, your body can tell the difference. You know, visually that this is a real person and somewhat of a jeopardy. Kind of situation as opposed to you just know nothing is real, but
right, good point.
Anyway.
Good call.
Also watched a couple of the vacation sequels were on European Vacation and Vegas Vacation, so
nice.
Which that's I have not awesome. Given a gander up? To in a while, but you know, European Vacation is a little bit better than I remember it, you know, because it you know, one, you can't beat the original Vacation no matter what, and there's still things that I still kind of giggle at.
I always thought European Vacation was the smart move for a sequel.
Oh yeah, that's the like, way to do it. I mean,
what are you gonna do? You're gonna go, you did the vacation, let's go overseas, you know. They could have done Hawaiian Vacation or something that would, but European, the fact that they tried to cram those in, like,
yeah,
it's good.
No, oh yeah, absolutely. So
and, yeah,
God, I miss Jack. But yeah, so it was amusing, and Vegas Vacation, which still is not good.
Yeah, I know.
Because immediately you could tell, like, because Clark comes in the house and he has a briefcase and it's knocking vases over. I'm like, this isn't.
No, and Clark, when he's driving, he's like almost running kids over, and you're like, come on. I just rewatched that a month ago, and it is tough. I like, you know, the scene where I like the character actor, I forget his name, but the guy that's always beating him, the casino employee. That they like jumped on that too much, you know, like he kept going back
like 3 times. Yeah.
Right. And it's like, it's just such a weird, weak story arc for him to be like, well, I get it. I'm addicted to gambling. I'm going back. And he just beats you. And it's like, it was just so tiresome.
Yeah. It's all, you know? the way Newton scenes were fun. I don't know why Beverly did.
Yeah. But that was such a weird thing too. Like he's like, come on over to my house, Beverly. And it's like, what is he, a predator? Like,
well, it's Showgirls Vegas, you know. This is what happens, you know.
It's true.
We could do a mashup of Vegas Vacation Showgirls, you know. They all have the same level of overacting.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Good call.
But yeah,
good
but call that's all I've really been watching, not too much, so.
I like it. Speaking of the Star Wars, I just wanted to crowbar in another segment of movies you can watch over and over again. And I picked The Empire Strikes Back. What is your policy on this? Is this your favorite Star Wars? Or
it is. Not?
It is. Okay.
It always has. So,
but I wasn't. Yeah, I don't remember.
I was 10 when this one came out, so it leveled up. You know, the next Star Wars. You know, like
you were 10.
I was 10 years old, and we had that cliffhanger for 3 long years. And I don't know if it was quite a cliffhanger. It felt like one at a time, but could not wait for the next sequel. And just dreamed about it. And so I was like the prime age, you know, for
were you able to see it in the theaters?
Oh yeah. I saw it in theaters a couple times. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. See, that is so cool to be that age and have that movie come out as a new film and see it theatrically.
Nobody knew.
I'm jealous.
Star Wars 2.
But like, you didn't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, what did you, as a 10-year-old, to see his arm get cut off and all, like that whole reveal ending?
It's gonna like
blow your little mind.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was like, remember the theater was like, oh, you know, like, but yeah, and you know, as you grew older, like, even in those years, I gravitated more to that one than Star Wars. And then by the time Jedi came out, I was 13, and obviously Jedi, I just knew, I was like, oh, this isn't this. I remember seeing Jedi in the theater. I'm like, this isn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you mentioned
kinda,
that before too.
Yeah, you kind of knew, you know. But this, I think this one holds up because I think between the story and the direction and the cinematography and Cloud City, which I do have a Cloud City. So on my one of my dressers, I do have that Cloud City lamp with Boba Fett and Slave One.
Oh, it's so cool. So,
and I think, have I seen my picture of, I
got, oh. Oh, I saw it. Explain to the listeners and the viewers, like, what was this majestic thing you got?
Well, so as soon as Madonna canceled, I was getting my refunds, and then I felt semi-sorry for myself, so it was kind of buy anything you want, and it wasn't a huge expense, but I bought this 7-piece bedding set of Empire Strikes Back sheets and pillowcases and comforter.
Oh, it's the coolest thing ever, and it's Empire Strikes Back theme. It's not Star Wars theme. It's like specifically Empire Strikes Back.
It is. Specifically for a 10-year-old's bedroom, not a 50-year-old's, but I had to have it.
You have to have it. No, it is cool for anybody. Like, I'm thinking about getting one myself. That or Superman. They're just so much like fun. But yeah, when you got this, it was I'll share a video or a picture later, but the detail of it, it's like, it's so cool.
It reminds you when you are 10, because you're looking at all the different pictures, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was like in the sheets, I'm like, oh, there's the Rebel Frigic, you know, and stuff, different ships and so forth. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, it's so cool. Are you going to keep it on your bed for like, is it a staple now?
No, I'll put it in the rotation.
In the rotation. Okay. There's multiple rotations. Are the other ones fun, or are they just random?
They are not like that at all. Have a Shining quilt, but I don't, or comforter, but I don't use that too often. But otherwise, I have
preserved
to more normal adult.
Yeah. Hey, you can't be an Empire Strikes Back.
No.
So that is so cool.
I can watch it over and over. Yeah.
You can watch it over and over. And I love the opening. They could have done anything, but they're on the Hoth with the, they, you know, they kill that thing. I forget the name of that creature.
The
thing he kills to stay alive.
Well, the Wampa he cuts open and puts.
Wampa.
The Wampa is the creature that attacks him, and the Tauntaun is what he cuts open to
put
Luke in to keep him warm.
Yeah, that thing. That whole sequence between that and the other one, it was just like kind of jarring and just a fun opening. They could have done anything, and they make it like an ice planet scene. So, yes.
Well, yeah, try to do the opposite of Tatooine.
Yeah, right. Switch it up.
Oh, that's the other thing. And they kept going back to the same back and forth to the same planets. And it's like, and I still can't stand. I know we're supposed to be talking about Empire Strikes Back, but when she goes, no, I'm Queen Amidala. And everybody's like, what?
No, I'm Queen.
Padme is Amidala.
I know.
And I was like, come on.
What are they doing?
I don't know.
And the accents, and it's like so melodramatic.
I will not refer this matter to a committee.
It hurts. It hurts. It is bad. You're better off watching Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
And next we have Revisiting the Razzies Year by Year, and today is the 9th Golden Raspberry Awards, which was held on March 29th, 1989, for 1988 films. And this is a doozy, which is a good thing, because there's a lot of doozies on here.
Oh, the 80s.
Oh, the 80s. Now, this is the 1988 movie, so we're gearing more towards a 90s. There's like a newer look to a lot of these films. They took some chances. And I feel like a lot of them, they were really hanging on to beating the dead horse out of some of these franchises. Like, we can squeeze one more out.
Yeah.
And you will hear these lists. But Okay, so let's kick it off with the worst original song.
Gotcha.
I'll just read these. There's Therapist from Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Which I had to look up because I wasn't familiar with that song. and I don't know where it shows up in the movie or why they picked this one out as like the worst original song, because I don't know if it was actually written from the movie. I don't think it was. But the thing is, Elm Street 4 had a decent soundtrack. I remember, I don't think she was even popular at the time. So I remember Sinead O'Connor had I Want Your Hands on Me on the soundtrack. Okay. But I don't think she hit it big until like a year later or something like
No, so, I don't think so. It was like early 90s, I thought she like got big.
But anyway, so I had to pull this one. I was like, why did they choose this? But who knows? Yeah.
I do like the name Therapist. which Robert does have a page entry on Dream Master. Mm-hmm. Skin Tight from Johnny Be Good, which was written and performed by Ted Nugent. You got me at Ted Nugent. Like, not a fan. Unless you're a fan, Robert. I'm sorry.
I am not.
No, not a fan of that guy. And then the winner was Jack Fresh from Caddyshack 2, written and performed by Full Force. Now, I have never seen Caddyshack 2.
I have. And
you have?
So that summer of 88, actually, I had met Harold Ramis, who directed the first Caddyshack. And I remember when we were talking to him, he said, he just told us, don't go see Caddyshack 2. I don't know. Yeah, he said
good
we had
for
nothing
him.
To do with it, and from every it is awful, whatever. So that's all I remember. But I think I saw it at some point, but certainly not in the theater because Harold told me not to.
Hey, who better to listen to than Harold Ramis about what to see?
Exactly.
Do you want to read the next one, sir?
So worst new star. So other nominees were Jean-Claude Van Damme in Bloodsport, which is weird to think that was his. He was the new star.
I thought he was around longer, but I guess I was wrong.
Yeah. Is it Roby Rosa in Salsa? Not familiar with. Tammy Aaron and The New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking.
Pippi Longstocking is coming to your town.
And Don, the talking horse in Hot to Trot.
Okay. Sorry, Don.
Yeah.
That movie looks amazing, by the way.
Worst new star. And this film will show up a couple times on this list. Ronald McDonald as himself in Mac and Me.
Is that a valid choice, Robert?
Have you seen Mac and Me?
Mac be like the worst new star?
Well, you don't want to. That would probably be better. Yeah, if we're going to do Don the Talking Horse, I think Mac,
right,
the weirdo alien, should be the worst new star. But Ronald is kind of creepy in this one. So
yeah, it's a pretty much a horrific McDonald's commercial. The whole movie. It's also amazing.
There's so much, so many amazing things in it. I agree.
So much going on.
So
the scene where the kid's like out of control, and it's just so good.
It's good. I've covered it.
I love your page entry on that. I do.
So all of you do worst screenplay here.
Worst screenplay. Nominees runners up are Willow, screenplay by Bob Dolman, story by George Lucas. What's your policy on Willow?
It was fine at the time. I don't think it's aged well. And I didn't see the follow-up series. But I think the follow-up series was already taken off Disney. So not, it was not
Oh, they not already axed it?
Yeah, I think they already did. Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Willow. Rambo 3, written by Sylvester Stallone and Sheldon Lettich, based on characters by David Morrell. Mac and Me, again, written by Stuart Raphael and Steve Fecky. Hot to Trot, screenplay by Stephen Knyer and Hugo Gilbert and Charlie Peters, story by Knyer and Gilbert. And the winner of worst screenplay is Cocktail by Haywood Gould. I would argue Rambo 3 is a worse screenplay than Cocktail because it's really Stallone helping the Taliban in Afghanistan. But I can see why they went with that.
Yeah, I don't know. So Cocktail, we still say lines from Cocktail. So
we do.
We've got theater tickets we still use. When my sister was in Toronto, she actually, there's a booth that Elizabeth Shue and Tom Cruise sit at, or Tom Cruise sits at in Cocktail, and Elizabeth Shue throws a drink on him or something like
that.
Yeah. And my sister's like, no, I want to sit at the booth where the couple's like, we have theater tickets.
We have theater tickets.
She didn't want to sit in the Tom Cruise booth.
No, no, so, of course not. That is funny.
Haywood Gold, we are still using your lines. So we are sorry you won worst screenplay.
Yes, we are sorry. I always thought it was funny in Cocktail that the measure of a good bartender is how many like bottles they can juggle. Because when I go out to a bar, I want people throwing glass bottles in front of my face. You know what I mean? Like, that was always so weird to me. It's like, hey, look what I'm doing. I'm like, really? That's the entertainment?
Yeah. You pay more for that? Like, just make the drink.
Make the drink.
Yeah, come right. on. There's a huge crowd. Let's go.
So isn't bad.
Gina Gershon in that, I think. I can't remember. But...
Anyway,
she might be.
Maybe
she's nominated. Who knows? But, well, worst director, we got Peter MacDonald for Rambo 3, Roger Donaldson for Cocktail, Michael Dinner for Hot to Trot, and then a tie for worst director. So Stuart Raffel for Mac and Me. Fair enough.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And Blake Edwards for Sunset. So Blake Edwards, he had a couple good films in his repertoire, but his films were just way too broad to be that good.
Blake Edwards did...
Did he do 10?
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Did he?
I don't know.
I don't think that was one.
I'm Matt Clark, and I have all the facts.
Yes.
Blake Edwards.
Maybe he does. He did more like Victor Victoria and comedy type things. So maybe he did do Breakfast, but I don't think he did. So.
Maybe.
There's a writer director.
Breakfast at Tiffany's was directed by Blake Edwards.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me.
And he also did Day of Wine and Roses, which is a good, really good underrated film. But he also did Cocktail. Or Sunset. What's Sunset?
So
is that
it was
Bruce Willis?
That was a
Sunset.
James Garner. Yeah, I think Bruce was in it as well. Oh. So it's one of the like I don't know. He kind of had what he called six sleepy comedies. You know, where it's like they really weren't that funny, but it had moments of being funny.
This is the movie about early Hollywood.
So I should like it, but maybe I should give it a revisit. I don't know.
Hey, if Robert doesn't like it, I don't like it. So it's up to you.
Maybe
you don't like crap.
If they shot it in LA, maybe I need to.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know. I don't remember seeing this movie, but it's something to do with like early Hollywood, I think. Gotcha. I don't know.
We know it all here.
We have all the facts, everybody.
At the podcasting.
We sure do.
Well, maybe I'll add that to my homework.
All right. All right. We'll revisit Sunset. We're supporting actress. We have Zelda Rubinstein in Poltergeist 3 as Tangina Barons.
Doing the best she could.
Yeah. And you're right. And you have a cool page on that as well. Marielle Hemingway in Sunset as Cheryl. Robert Patterson is Balmy in Omaha Days. What is
that? I'm not familiar with that. I was wondering about that. Yeah.
So ridiculous. Daryl Hannah in High Spirits as Mary Plunkett Brogan. I love your sigh. You're like, what is High Spirits? Is that like a witch comedy?
It's a comedy.
Or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So she
Okay. Right?
Just pass on that. Yeah.
Eileen Brennan in The New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking is Miss Bannister.
I did not see that movie, but I loved Eileen Brennan, obviously, for particularly her role in Private Benjamin and Clue. But
good call. Yeah. She is good in Clue. We talked about her before, too.
Yeah, she is.
And
funny.
I did see New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking a few times. It's pretty bad.
It's
weird.
Not made for me, you know.
No, it's not made for anybody. And the winner of Worst Supporting Actress, the Razzie goes to Christy McNichol in Two Moon Junction as Patty Jean.
I forgot she was in that.
What is Two Moon Junction? Is that a...
It was like a romance type sexy movie.
Really?
Yeah. Which is not my cup of tea, but
no.
Yeah. I think I saw it once, but I was like, she was in that? But I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Two Moon. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the name Two Moon Junction.
Yeah. So maybe I will not revisit that. I'm sorry.
You're like, nope, putting my foot down.
It's not available.
It's not available. Do you want me to read Worst Supporting Actor?
I'll do Worst Supporting Actor, which, sad. Christopher Reeve in Switching Channels. So have you seen Switching Channels? It is a semi-remake of His Girl Friday with Christopher Reeve, Burt Reynolds, and Kathleen Turner.
I don't think I have seen it, sir.
So I have done locations for this movie, but I have not published them yet. So keep a lookout.
All right. We will keep a lookout. Yeah. That's cool.
Harvey Keitel for Last Temptation of Christ.
Okay.
Richard
As Judas
Crenna.
Iscariot.
Yeah. Richard Crenna in Rambo 3, which...
Yeah, deserving.
Yeah, and I feel like he probably just plays himself. So yeah. Billy Barty in Willow, which...
Okay.
Well, you know, come on.
Yeah.
And this is probably well-deserved for the winner of Worst Supporting Actor, Dan Aykroyd in Caddyshack.
Was Dan Aykroyd the... Again, I haven't seen it. Was he the only star in that, or did like other guys come back?
I don't remember anybody else coming back. I know I don't think he wasn't in the first one.
No. Oh, yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, no, yeah. But was he like the big name?
Probably. All I remember is the you know, it had one of those posters where they had like 12 people lined up and they're all doing it. But
oh, yeah.
I don't think I could revisit that either. So
it wasn't a good year for Aykroyd. Didn't he also do Dragnet this year?
I think that was the same year, that or 87. So
yeah.
Speaking of, I was trying to find an 80s shirt and I have an 87 shirt on. So
let's see.
My less than zero shirt.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's awesome. That is a great shirt.
LA late 80s. Didn't get better than that. So
you can't. That brown misty haze in the air. Worst actress, Vanity in Action Jackson.
Now, I loved Action Jackson for some reason. Have you seen it?
No, I don't think so.
It wasn't a... This is where I was seeing all movies in the theater, so it was just one of those things. So Carl Weathers is in it, Craig T. Nelson, Vanity, Sharon Stone. So I thought it was a decent movie. I just remember
Action
Jackson. I think I still have my Action Jackson poster, too.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the poster. I know Vanity. I only know her because she dated Nikki Sixx, and they were like really into the drugs together. Motley Crue.
She seemed to be fine. I don't know.
Hey, not
sorry,
judging.
Vanity. Yeah,
sorry, Vanity. Cassandra Peterson in Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, which was the first Elvira movie,
yes.
Or only?
Yeah, it was the first. Yeah, she did one or two. I think there was definitely a second one, but she was fantastic in this movie. So shame on you,
Beth. She nailed it.
Yeah. There's still lines that are fantastic.
Elvira is such a cool, funny gimmick. I remember even as a kid, there'd be pinball machines at arcades of her. And she had like such a cool viral marketing thing. You always saw Elvira and you're like, this is cool. It was like everywhere. Like it was okay to like her. It wasn't like, don't look at that, Matthew. It was like, that's Elvira. It was cool.
She's funny. She still is funny. So she had a great wit. So speaking of pinball, I forgot to mention that at the Alamo for Indiana Jones, they had a free Indiana Jones pinball machine that you could, which
really?
I had never seen before. Yeah. So they brought it in special.
You could just play it?
Yeah. So I think I posted a picture or two. Yeah. So before the movie, we played some Indiana Jones pinball.
I think they should do a sixth one. Indiana Jones, The Omens of Omaha. Like what I did there?
Nothing happens. Like
I can't stop thinking about the spinoff of like Solomon's Gold or whatever.
King
like
Solomon's
ripoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, it's amazing. Anyway, Whoopi Goldberg, back to Worst Actress. Whoopi Goldberg in The Telephone. What is this one, Robert?
I'm not familiar. You know, she was making quite a few films after The Color Purple. And some were good. Some were like... Jumpin' Jack Flash is probably the one I kind of really liked, but there's some other stinkers like this one I don't remember. But
this grossed less than $100,000.
Yeah, so there you go.
Wow. Not, Rip not Torn really. Directed it.
Oof. Well, I like Rip Torn. I didn't realize he directed.
I think that's why we like him better as an actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rebecca De Mornay in And God Created Woman as Robin Shea. Imagine that's a comedy.
I think so.
And the winner is Liza Minnelli in Arthur II on the Rocks and in Rent-A-Cop as Linda Marola Bach and Della Roberts.
I feel like
I know
I've seen
Arthur
both.
Too. Yeah. It's so bad. I've never seen Run a Cop.
I've seen both. Arthur 2 was like way late. I think it was like 7 years after the original. You know, like everybody moved on. Nobody wanted to see that. And already by late 80s, it was no longer funny to be a drunk. You know, like.
No, that wasn't the right time for it.
Yeah, yeah. Rent-A-Cop is the one with Burt Reynolds that, I don't know. So I love Liza. And I think she found her, I mean, she was probably at her best in Arrested Development that I don't think she has great timing and is a good comedic actress in that part that she has. But anyway, I like
she does have good timing. She's a good actress. I just feel like I missed the mark with not seeing Rent-A-Cop.
Well, maybe I don't know. I don't know if we can recommend that, but we'll see.
It's not going on the homework list.
Yeah. If it happens to be on Tubi.
Okay. If it's on Tubi, on Tubi.
Then we will.
Okay. What's the next section here?
Worst actor. So Burt Reynolds, who we just talked about for Rent-A-Cop and Switching Channels. So he kind of got a double nomination there.
Sorry, Burt.
Jackie Mason and Caddyshack 2.
Oh, gosh.
Bobcat Goldthwait for Hot to Trot. Tom Cruise in Cocktail, which, all right.
Okay.
Anti-Tom thing. I guess I was kind of anti-Tom at the time. I saw Cocktail, though, in the theater.
He was really up and down. He's doing Top Gun, Born on the 4th of July, Cocktail, Days of Thunder. Like, he really was trying to make a name for himself. And he succeeded. I mean, he did it. All kinds of different roles.
We're still talking about him. He's still number one. But winner for worst actor, Sylvester Stallone in Rambo 3.
I'm not a tourist.
The incorrectly numbered.
I know.
We still can't get past that. Yeah.
I was just talking to somebody about that. It's like Rambo or First Blood is such a good film and you feel sorry for him. And then he turns into this oiled up like Cobra guy in Afghanistan. And you're like, what happened? But you're right, Robert. It's not the correct title. It should be Rambo 2.
Two. Yes.
Right. So I don't know. But yeah, that's a bad movie. Have you ever watched it?
I saw that at the theater.
Oh, did you really?
I was 18. I was seeing everything in the theater. Literally.
No, that's awesome. I would have seen it in the theater if I could. Like,
if it was the top movie opening that weekend, I probably saw it in the theater.
I like that you saw that. I just remember they bring him. Remember, it's always like in every Rambo movie, or at least the last three. He's always has to be persuaded to come out. They're like, he's like, oh, I'm giving that up. They're like, we need you. And then he does, and he just starts like mowing people down. It's like, wow, you really snap right back into it.
I remember How to Kill. Because I think they made, I can't remember how many they have. And then they started just calling it Rambo again, you know, like where they stopped.
Yeah.
We're still going through that phase where you just call it the same title, even though it's number five or six, you know.
You know, I have a theory, and I hope it comes true, that they're going to go back to the numerical things. Like, people are ready for that again, because it's cool to have, like, that kind of nostalgia now. And I feel like it's growing a little tired of calling the movie the same one. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're going to go back. They're going to do, like, Jaws 5 or something like that. And we're going to get back into it.
Who can...
It's time for the shark to come back. Before we read Worst Picture, I went down a rabbit hole of Jaws 3. Mm. Interesting fan trivia, or theory, I should say. A lot of fans of the film think that the shark in Jaws 3 is a megalodon, not a great white. And I can buy into that because it's 35 feet long, too big for a great white. It could be a megalodon.
How much do they have to eat to keep going?
How many skiers? But the original script was going to be the shark gets trapped in like a lake, which I don't know how it works because it needs salt water. Mm-hmm. But it was supposed to be like more of a Lake Placid than SeaWorld.
Gotcha.
And then it was going to be a comedy. But
Jaws 3, People Zero. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. And then finally, worst picture nominees are Rambo 3, Max and Me.
Mac.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mac and Me.
That would be the sequel.
That would be the sequel, right. Rambo 3 is TriStar, Mac and Me is Orion, Hot to Trot Warner Brothers, Caddyshack 2 Warner Brothers, and the winner goes to Touchstone's Cocktail, which I think Rambo 3 is worse than Cocktail.
I imagine Caddyshack 2 has to be a worse picture.
I think so.
I don't think they like Tom. I'm just going to say it. Yeah.
I would get a Cocktail t-shirt of like just the logo. The neon, I think, is cool. I would rock that.
Elizabeth Shue was at her best. So there was a lot it had going on.
Yeah.
Versus Tom just.
It had. Gina Gershon is in it as well.
Okay.
As Coral.
Yep.
That's
of course.
Her name, Coral.
I just remember her at the bar for some reason.
What happens at the end of Cocktail? I don't really remember. Does he like. He's on the. He opens up the bar, right? Like he buys the bar in the.
I don't know. I remember seeing it.
Yeah, that's it. He opens his own bar, Flanagan's. I'm reading that.
In honor of,
right.
Yeah, I remember seeing. I think we saw it at the Dollar Theater too, where we'd go see all sorts of movies. But
that is, those are the Razzies. So, do you feel like this is a valid, fair listener?
Except for the Cocktail stuff, because look, all these others are pretty trashy movies. Cocktail is still fine. I mean, it's not one I have even on DVD or revisit, but it's certainly not bad like these other ones. So I'm sure there was much worse 1988 movies.
Right, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and there's a lot that didn't, you know, Halloween 4 didn't show up on this list, so good for
Rightfully
that.
Rightfully so, it didn't.
Yep, it could have.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Okay, and next I have a surprise trailer for you to watch, Robert.
Okay.
This is Rent-A-Cop from 1987. I've never seen this.
So this might get me excited to watch it. I don't know.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Chicago.
Go.
It was the perfect bust.
Please!
Until it went bust. It cost Tony Church his job.
Your head's been in this department.
Fine, I'm out of here.
You gotta move on. Those guys are dead. You're alive.
Now.
That's not Santa. He's a fake.
He's got a new career.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Church, you rent a cop?
And his first client is a rent-a-girl.
Hello, sweetheart. And you brought your teddy.
The guy from the hotel who tried to kill me. Will he try it again?
Don't you touch me, lady. Don't shoot.
You like this all the time because you're getting on my nerves.
I bet you had a lot of dates with a lot of different girls when you were young. Ha! Now you believe me.
What's the matter?
I'm not used to Karen.
Burt Reynolds.
Can't you just once do what I say without arguing?
No.
Liza Minnelli.
What are you looking at?
Nothing.
James Remar. Richard Masser.
No!
Richard Masser. Bernie Casey. Dionne Warwick.
Yeah.
And Robbie Benson.
Dionne Warwick.
Rent-A-Cop.
Sometimes you have to go through a hell of a lot to find out what you're really good at.
So is it a comedy or an action movie? I don't know.
Well, that was late 80s for you. It was a little bit of a mix. Mostly action, but with some comedic actors. So I'm saying this is itching to be remade with like Scarlett Johansson and Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like some of the lines weren't matching up to what their mouths were saying, that they clearly did ADR, but didn't make it like look good. And when he shoots the shotgun to open up the door, that not only would blow the door off, it would put a whole like through there, but they have this massive shotgun to like shoot off a door handle. It's like, you don't need to do that.
Like a hotel door handle too. Like,
I love Burt Reynolds though, with the Bears, the Chicago Bears sweatshirt going, yeah, laughing when she's like, you're young. And he's like, huh? It's like, what's going on there? Are they like living together? And
Richard
Nassar and Dionne Warwick, they really like crowbarred those in at the end. They should have been in like the earlier parts of the trailer.
I don't, it was like, poor Dionne Warwick. She's like,
no, she's like,
she goes, like, it's an obligation that she's like,
what am I doing?
Yeah, I think, remember late 80s was, I don't know if Chicago must have had good tech breaks because everything was shot in Chicago in the 80s, late 80s.
That's true, isn't it?
Child's Play, Poltergeist 3,
yeah,
Running
like
Scared.
Everything.
Yeah, so they must have had some good deals. And I remember when I was young, I was like, Chicago seems scary.
Yeah, that's it all did. I saw. It seemed like this big, frightening, like scarier than New York in the 80s kind of thing.
It's probably scarier now, but
I think so. For sure.
Yeah, I didn't. I did not realize Liza Minnelli was a prostitute.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. A Woman of the Night. I love when her heel breaks the thing. And
do they call her Rent a Girl though? I don't know. But
is that what they said?
I don't know. She's like, well, she's not really a girl anymore. But
is it?
She's wearing her Liza, you know, red. Like, she just came from a show.
Oh yeah, she came right from Broadway.
Yeah.
Did Rent a Cop? Was that like the Paul Blart Mall Cop action movie of the 80s kind of thing? Like, who's the Rent a Cop? I don't get it.
So Burt Reynolds is because
he's fired.
He got fired for doing something, and now she's like, "I need your protection." I'm sure is the thing kind of like an early My Bodyguard.
That's what it is.
And they probably fell in love because, like, we hate each other.
Of course. Yeah, I love when they're like, and the cop loses his job, and he lights up the cigarette, and he looks up at the camera, and it's like, oh, it's so 80s, it's great.
Like, you're out of here. They always get fired.
You're out of here, right? I'm going to partner you with the person the exact opposite of you.
At the end, we were wrong. You get your job back.
We need you.
Yeah. I feel like I need to see it, though.
I feel like we need to watch it and recap for everybody. Time for Blind Man's Bluff. This is where we pick a random section of Robert's website and we go through the magic of set jetting. And here is your clue, Robert. The clue is something that you've written on your page.
All right.
And you're going to have to guess.
Okay.
By the time the fourth entry in the franchise rolled around, blank was a household name and lost much of the fear once associated with the original film.
Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Oh my gosh. Yes, sir. How did you know?
I was like, number four, whatever. And then I knew immediately what.
You knew, knew what it was.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here is the Dream Master, Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Cool font there. First part is at South Serrano, Los Angeles, which is East LA, I think.
I think it's a little south of Hollywood, if I remember right. They built a facade of this is the first one where they did not go back to the original Elm Street house. But what's funny is that you go to, when you see websites, you know, talking about the Elm Street house, sometimes they use the part four picture. But you can tell it's not a real house. I don't know if you go for the next one down, you can kind of see. But
first of all, what were the little girls doing again? My memory's a little hazy.
Oh, they're always jumping rope and
that was it.
The Freddy
the song.
Thing.
Freddy's dead.
Yeah.
One, two. Robert is here. Three, four. Okay.
So this is the picture they always use for saying the Elm Street house, whatever. But that's actually not even that's just a facade that they made to stick in front of whatever. There was no house.
Yeah.
Something else.
It's not the real deal.
Yeah. So at the time, I remember Alice's house was not found. And this was early enough that Google Street View was not everywhere. And there was like, this was a block of a Burbank. So one of the stars, Andrus Jones, said it's somewhere between like North Hollywood and Glendale. I'm like, well, that's Burbank. Burbank. So there was like the six blocks that were not on Google Street View. So I remember one of my trips, I just drove around until I found the house.
Oh, you did a great job. You found
Thank
it.
Thank you. So that was a while ago, obviously. So Springwood High School is now Venice High School, better known as Rydell High in Greece.
I remember this. I remember this. Good shots. Good shots. Okay, this is the Crave Inn.
Yeah, so Andrus Jones also helped me find this at the time because he gave me some type of hint, and I can't remember what it was, but so I was able to track this down in Culver City. So now everybody and their brother has been to this location.
But you were the first.
I was the first to find. I had to use the actor's help to give me a kind of a clue of where it was located at.
You pieced it together. This one took a lot of detective work to find the street by finding the houses appearing across the house facade, which we've talked about, but you you were the first, I think.
Yep.
What part of the movie is this? Was this when they...
This is go back to the Elm Street house. Like, you know, because people are like, oh, it's been abandoned. I mean, it's been abandoned for a couple of years, and obviously Springwood does not take care of their...
This guy's hair looks pretty good for 88. You could rock that today.
I would... I had a lot of hair envy to that, so... That's not too far from what my hair kind of looked like at that time.
She needs a lot of work.
Well, this is where she's still mousy, and then she becomes...
Oh, got it. Yeah. But yeah, that hairline, you could rock that today.
He had the best hair, for sure, out of all the Elm Street movies.
Oh, Anderson yeah. Jones
had the best hair.
I'm jealous. Okay. This is Kristen's house at 450 June Street.
Yep. So I don't know if this had been found before or not. So, but at the time... where the new Kirsten dies, I guess. And then, let's see, we go back to the school. Yeah, so the others, I think we go back and forth to locations. So the cemetery was also I don't mess around, you know, I try to find the exact spot where, even though it's all out of focus, I don't know how I found this particular spot, but.
Where is the cemetery located?
So this one is Evergreen Cemetery, where they actually shot the first and third Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
So
cool.
There's some trips where I feel like I do a lot of cemetery work.
You do great cemetery work. This is the Crave Inn still?
The Crave Inn, which I did have lunch at once with Kellen. It's a nice little cafe there.
The Rialto.
Of course, in Pasadena. Used in quite a few films.
This is where this is the dream where she watches the movie and it's...
Yep. She comes into the movie. So this movie did have some good ideas, but it just felt a little too MTV-ish for me at the time.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that. Yeah. This is a cool shot, though. Yeah. We've actually done this page before, but that's awesome. We're doing it again. Because this is a good one.
Debbie's
this out. Is... Yeah, this is also in Culver City.
Yep, right down the street.
And, of course, the Mulholland Fountain.
Yep, during non-drought.
Non-drought.
Times in L.A., which is a nice little visit if you have time in L.A. You're usually stuck in this bottleneck around this area trying to get to the freeway.
Traffic's bad. When I first moved to L.A., I lived like 5-minute drive from here. And it's really cool. You know, I mean, there's the Griffith Park. There's the zoo nearby. It's a cool little spot, and you have to drive to get here. So it's not like, you know, it's always crowded in the park. The traffic's always bad, but you know, it's like kind of tucked away, which is cool.
Yeah, and right up the street from this, the fountain is a unused gas station. I think it's only used in movies, so it's kind of fenced off.
They used it
in a couple of movies. Yeah.
You've shot that gas station before?
I have, and I can't remember what movie it was for. I think The Nice Guys or something like that.
Oh, okay. And here you are with Andrus Jones and some of the cast. So this is a cool page.
So, yeah, I remember I was at a screening once, and the cast was right behind me.
Hey, it's Fred Durst.
I had some Fred Durst moments back then. So,
were you trying to look like Fred Durst?
I think I kind of naturally did, but...
Yeah. Hey, it was a popular look.
It was a popular, yeah. So that picture, I was rocking my original 1988 Halloween 4 shirt that I could still fit into.
Oh, did I miss it?
I think it's the very last picture here. There it is.
Nice. You still have that shirt?
I do. I don't think I can fit into it anymore, but I still have it.
That's so cool. But that's a great page, sir.
Thanks.
Do you have plans to revisit Nightmare on Elm Street again, or do you think you've covered everything that you need to?
Location-wise? There's a few spots. I think one in Elm Street 5 I haven't found, and we were at USC where they had the bell tower from Freddy's Dead.
Yes, that's right.
So fantastic. I think it's been mostly covered. We actually went to a new Nightmare I did a revisit to new Nightmare location. So Brian, where the little kid goes up onto the freeway, and we were going back and forth on whether we should hop the fence or not. So we decided not to hop the fence.
Probably a wise choice.
Yeah. But, you know, because I wanted to, if it wasn't so overgrown, because I wanted to get the right shot, but otherwise. Yeah.
Well, you're a completist, and who knows what the future will hold. And just to tease the listeners, you did update, and we'll do this in another show so we give it a proper page, but Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles.
Woo-hoo!
Which a lot of the shots, at least the ones that I remember, were like public domain or public. I felt like a lot of the movie, they probably guerrilla shot it. Obviously, they didn't, but I feel like you could duplicate a lot of that movie without getting permits if you like made it really fast. Because when they're like in the Beverly Hills parks and stuff, and you're like,
So what maybe, Matt, see, I was trying to do this. So 2 years ago was the anniversary for the film. And so, and I was trying to get all the locations done, and I just couldn't have time. And Jerry Burns, and he was at the Hollywood show, and I talked to him about it. So I worked hard to find some of these locations. And then I found this little production notes thing that said, the house is at the corner of Sunset and Hillcrest. I'm like, and then I couldn't find the school. And then I found the school, and then I literally found this thing that says it's in Pasadena. I'm like, why was I missing all these clues?
Yeah, it's in Pasadena. Yeah.
But well, Brian will be listening because I was most upset because I was adamant about finding this Wendy's drive-through that they go through.
And where was like, where was the drive-through?
I was looking at every Wendy's possible, because it had a pretty kind of specific look for it. So I finally found it, and it was demolished years ago. But I found where it was located.
At least you found it.
Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles fans can rest assured that the Wendy's has been found.
The Wendy's has been found, guys. You can sleep tonight with your head on the pillow, safe and sound. And on the next episode, we will cover the Razzies. It'd be 1989, the last year of the 80s.
Yes.
So,
which means it's got to be good.
Which means it's going to be fantastic.
It will be.
So that'll be our show today. Everybody, thank you for tuning in and listening to the podcast, Set Jetter Saturdays, and we will see you on the set.